When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
This is I Should Be Writing, number season 17, episode 7. And I'm trying to keep up with that a little bit better. Got a fancy light box to take pictures of. And I've just messed up everything and lost my W. Haha. Smooth. That's what they call me. Anyway, this is the podcast for wannabe fiction writers. And I am your host, Mer Lafferty. Hey, Tim. Good to see you. I'm streaming this to Twitch and I think YouTube. We'll see how well that goes. And this will go into the feed later on if you just listen to audio via RSS. And the Patreon supporters will get it first. So that is the news there. As for what I've been up to, I drove to Boston again. Thanks to the coronavirus, we are not comfortable with our kid flying, so we drove her up on Friday and drove ourselves back on Saturday because there's nothing to do because there's a pandemic. So none of the typical any touristy things, even just like eating at a nice restaurant. No. So that pretty much wore me out for Sunday, and yesterday I was still pretty tired. So today I'm trying to get back into it. And I don't know why I'm wearing the headphones. Because all it did was confuse me when I tried to get Pretzel going. Well, the stream is live. If you're a newbie, don't do that. No, don't do that. I have a bag of mustaches here. I finally got everything set up for the Evil Mer Mirror Universe thing. So if anybody wants to redeem some channel points. Ah, there it is. I got my mustache ready. Sort of. Hey, Sario. Hey, K. Kimmy. Books and Yarn. Good to see you. Ooh, these are soft. I didn't know they'd be soft. I got a whole bunch. I got a whole bag of mustaches. The world we live in, that you can get a whole bag of mustaches. Hey, Indigo Quill. Wow. Lots of people. Good to see you all. So, this is I Should Be Writing. I usually talk about the emotional challenges writers have, but I often go into craft as well, which is what I'm going to be doing here. 600 points short of a mustache, you'll get there. This is today's mustache. So, I'm sorry, it's bizarre. What I wanted to talk about today was the character's wants versus character's needs. This is a very important aspect that not a lot of people talk about. Or at least the stuff that I read or listen to. And whenever somebody brings it up, it's always like a light bulb hitting me. No, lightning hits, a light bulb goes off in your head. Yeah, that's the way it goes. So it's like a light bulb turning on because I have to remember I don't know about you guys, but I don't think about all the rules of writing when I'm writing a scene. I don't know whether that shows a weakness in my writing or the fact that I know the rules well enough to not have to think, does this character have something she wants in this scene, and do I give it to her? Because really, all of your characters should have this happen. Hey Todd, good to see you. So, the famous comment is, even if it's a glass of water, your character should want something, because that want drives the scene forward. If you don't want anything, you can be like those rats in that experiment where the scientists turned down the dopamine in their head, so they had no desires. So they just died. They had no desire to eat or drink. And I did not mean for this to get depressing. So, sorry about that. But, it's... a lot of times people make your protagonist get want or desire something, while everybody else in the supporting groups work to help that happen with no wants or needs of their actual own. And yeah, their wants and needs could be help the protagonist, but, you know, there's usually something else going on there. Under Pope, Billy Boy, good to see you. So, when you're writing your scene, if you feel a scene is a little bit bland, one thing, you know, beyond looking at the passive voice versus active voice, all that stuff, but another thing you need to look at is, do my characters want anything? And the scene ends when your character either gets what they want or is denied what they want. Now, those are the wants and needs that actually drive the story. But drive, like, the scenes along. But there's a larger picture of wants and needs that affect the story as a whole. And that is, your character your character is introduced as somebody who has a want. And whatever it is that they need, they don't know it or they deny it. So, of course it's hard for me to break down other things here on the spot. I should have written down that part. So for example, I usually like to go back to Star Wars because it's a pretty solid storytelling structure, and a lot of people know it. So Luke Skywalker, all he wants to do is go to the academy, wants to go down to Tashi Station and hang out with his friends. That's what he wants. I think what he needs is to be able to harness his abilities to save the galaxy. He needs to make a difference. He needs to find his people that will join him to make a difference. A lot of times people want something that's kind of superficial. You see this in good romances. When a character has a want that's usually falling in love, or never falling in love again and just focusing on work. When it turns out what they need has to do with fulfilling something within their own lives that has nothing to do with their romance partner, but as they discover what they need, they then get what they want. Now, not everybody gets what they want if they go after what they need. It's not like a you put the quarter in and out comes the prize. But that is one way to do it. There's a gay take on When Harry Met Sally called When Harry Met Harry. And it's an awesome book. I loved it. It was a lot of fun. But one of the Harrys is... I think he's Chinese, and he works at his father's company in San Francisco, and he has a dream to you know, invent things. And it was his dream since, like, the very beginning, since moving to the U.S. And he's kind of held under his father's heel to work at this company. Now, of course, there's a love story in there, and it's not a huge spoiler because it is a romance that they do get together. And the plot points are not a spoiler if you've ever seen When Harry Met Sally. It's very clearly, you know, not really a parody, but it's taken off the beat, the plot points of When Harry Met Sally. It's just two guys. But he has something that Harry did not in the film, which is when the inevitable break apart of the romantic people happens, he kind of throws himself into work but finds an outlet for his inventing. And after he realizes that he can follow that path in life is when he also realizes he wants Harry to be with him. And so the point about what he wants, he thinks he wants to, you know, make his father happy and be a good corporate boy and maybe someday invent. But what he needs is companionship and people to believe in him and the courage to step out and do his own thing. So, I'm going to catch up with chat. Tim says, I just wrote a scene where a bunch of characters with clear goals collided in conversation. It was super fun. I'd been missing that kind of thing. I will tell you something in a moment. Seat says, what should I do if my main character doesn't actually want anything concrete until halfway through the book? Just in a survival, trying to understand how the world works mode. He wants survival. I mean, wanting survival, wanting to maintain the status quo, wanting, you know, good weather. That's all wants. Your character doesn't need to want something that's tangible. So, you know, think a bit larger, that just staying alive is a very large, large human want and need. So don't worry about that. Sario says the same thing, wants to survive. But Tim, there's a role-playing game that I used to play every holiday season. And we don't do it anymore, and the reason why we don't do it is what I'm going to tell you is, it's called The Secret Lives of Gingerbread Men. And it's super fun. It's everybody has just been baked as a cookie with various decorations, which turn out to be your role-playing game equipment. And there's everything in the book, everything you decorate a gingerbread person with has some sort of ability. So, but the reason why it's called Secret Lives of Gingerbread Men, it's not just the GM has to create an adventure for people to run around the house and be cookies. They all have a secret motivation that they're not allowed to tell anybody. And because they have this secret motivation, they're not having this whole, hey, your party stays together and goes to a bar to meet a stranger with a long beard who will tell you what your next quest is. No, they pretty much get off the cookie tray and then run to fulfill whatever their goal is. And their goal could be anything from replace the angel at the top of the Christmas tree, or marry the angel at the top of the Christmas tree, or get eaten by the dog, or find a old discarded wise cookie underneath the fridge. I mean, they came up with the weirdest stuff. And that made it both awesome, but also very difficult to run the game because they wouldn't stay together. So you had, like, these guys running off to figure out how to get off the table so they could go find the dog. And then these two are running over to the Christmas tree. And then I made the mistake of allowing Ursula Vernon to be a cookie necromancer. So she went looking for little pieces of cookies to Frankenstein them up into her loyal followers. Ursula Vernon is a delightful friend and so much fun and both a pleasure and a headache to roleplay with. So, yeah, she was, I made the mistake of allowing her to do it, but she started, yeah. That's what she did. Another rule with Ursula is you never give her a pet or a familiar. Never. Never, ever, ever. That's what Kevin tells me anyway. So anyway, I was recently listening to Save the Cat Writes a Novel. And I discovered that I hadn't really thought of things this way, but the way she puts it on, the way she describes it, made it very clear, is that somewhere around the midpoint or the end of Act Two, sometime in that part, when things start to fall apart for your hero, that's when they realize what they want is not what they need. And if they ignore what they need and keep going after what they want, then that's a tragedy. That is a book that does not fall into the realm of romances. It is, you know, that's Hamlet. Hamlet never went for what he needed. He always went for what he wanted. So, it's something you need to keep underneath. You know, you're not going to be thinking about wants and needs the whole way through. You're going to be thinking, if a scene stalls, what am I missing? And if the feeling of the story's pacing doesn't quite work in the second act, you're got to wonder where they make that change, where they realize what they want and what they need are two different things. And if they change, then they continue. And if they stay the same, then they don't. And I'm sorry I'm going to spoil a movie for you. If you have any interest in seeing Anna and the Apocalypse, which is a Christmas musical with zombies, then, which I highly recommend, then just don't listen for the next, like, 30 seconds. But we were watching that when we were trying our dreadfully failed watch parties last month, and my daughter, you know, not the professional writer in the room, was looking, and as you see all the characters sing their songs about what's going on inside them, blah, 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 there's a handful that are just like, you can't leave me, you can't go away, you can't stay, you know, please don't go away to college, please stay here with me, your dad wants you to stay, I want you to stay. And then two others are basically like, I have found my soulmate, everything is perfect, nothing needs to change ever. Those are the people that died. And my daughter pointed it out to me. She's like, if they didn't change, they died. And I looked back and I went, crap, you're right. So that is an extreme point in an extreme reaction. You know, people don't need to die to metaphorically die, but there's often metaphorical death in novels, especially with people who will not change. So think about that. The wants versus needs is a tool that, once you figure it out, will really help you move the plot of your novel along, both on a scene-by-scene level, but also as a larger, overarching book-type blanket. Is blanket the right word there? I'm not sure. So, yes, in chat, Ursula sounds like a lot of fun. She is. Definitely. Seat says, I get that survival is a sensible desire. I guess my fear is individual scenes don't hinge on it at the front, so I'm afraid the scenes will end up seeming boring or not moving the plot forward enough. At the moment, they are geared mostly as character building for the uniqueness of a circumstance, as someone who doesn't understand language. Needing to understand is also something. I mean, don't worry about it too much, because it sounds like you're writing the wants in there. It's just not tangible. But if you're really worried, finish it and give it to a beta reader. Because, you know, I can only advise so much with regards to what I see in the chat or what you send me an email. So it still sounds like your character has things that he wants. Wanting to understand, wanting to wanting to learn, wanting to survive. Those are all wants. So that is what I have to say on wants and needs. Got an email today that the Hugo nominations are open. There's a scene in Schitt's Creek, and I can say that because that is the name of a TV show. TV show, and it's S-C-H-I-T-T. So, there's a character who's a ex-soap opera star. And, you know, failed actress who's fallen away from her wealth kind of thing. And she's having a discussion with somebody else. And the question is, what's your favorite season? And she goes, awards. Which is always amuses me because this time of year is very nerve-wracking because the nominations for all the awards start getting paid attention to. Yeah. The Philip K. Dick nominations came out a couple of weeks ago. They're given out around Easter. And I'm not sure about Nebulas, but they're given out before the Hugos, so those should be open. But that's only for members of SFWA. Excuse me. But yeah, it's something that's so strange because you, and by you I mean me, want it so bad, but having seen like the underbelly of the Hugos in the past couple of years, it's like a little tarnished. There's been some drama, there's been some, in my opinion, ugliness. But still, nothing was shinier to me as a kid than seeing a rocket on the cover of a book. Seeing that book was Hugo nominated or had won. So, I would love to win one for fiction. Excuse me, for fiction, but yeah, I don't know. I thought I didn't see that happening. But I got, my last novel was nominated, so that was surprising and strange. Todd says, I would like an award season that isn't a dumpster fire myself. Yeah, yeah, me too. But yes, both of my podcasts, I Should Be Writing and Ditch Diggers, are eligible for Best Fan Cast. I would think it would be Best Related Work, but they like to put podcasts all in one little group. Including stuff on YouTube like vlogs. And I guess this now. Anyway, so, but also, I do work on Escape Pod with SB Divya, so we're eligible for Best Short Fiction Editor, and Escape Pod's eligible for Best Semi-Prozine. And I had a couple of short stories out in anthologies this year, so. And I wrote Blazeball fanfic around the holidays, so that was fun. I suppose that's eligible. Peter Watts won a Hugo with his fanfic about The Thing. Is I Should Be Writing Now a vodcast? I don't even know what that means because you get notifications when I'm live And the videos do go up on YouTube and you can subscribe to them. So I suppose they are, but that doesn't mean I'm not doing the audio RSS feed anymore. I'm definitely still taking the audio out of this and producing it for audio podcast and putting it out in the feed that everybody has been subscribing to for years. Appreciate that, by the way. Fanfic now a category, just part of related works. No, fanfic is not a category. I was just joking that my Blazeball fanfic could be eligible for best... How many words is it? It might be best novelette. It might be over 7,500 words. I need to check. But it's fanfic, but Peter Watts broke that ceiling when he won with The Things, which is basically the movie The Thing told from The Thing's point of view. So, yeah, did that answer your question, K. Kimmy? Definitions are always harder in the real world. Yeah, I was looking. They're doing a, I think they're doing a test, Hugo, this year for best game. And I was laughing at that because there are asterisks all over the award description. They're just everywhere. And it's like, you know, defining what a game is and all of that stuff. I would vote for your Blazeball fanfic. Thank you, Numbers Ninja. That's sweet. I believe you do have nomination abilities, by the way. I'm just saying. But, where was I going? Actually, we should nominate Blazeball, too, for best game. I was going to nominate Hades, because it's got some phenomenal writing. Which is why I picked it up, actually. I usually don't like roguelikes, but... I feel like I've talked about Hades a lot in recent streams, but it's a very good game with excellent writing. So yeah, people are mentioning my Blazeball fanfic. If you want to read my Blazeball fanfic, it is at merverse.com. And I just wrote it because I'd been wanting to write... I'd had a character of my in my head named Lancelot Dine and Dash. And I figured every weird thing that Blazeball tells us, like how the players are hatched from the field of eggs whenever someone's incinerated or a new team comes along, you know, my first thought is, who's taking care of that field of eggs? Someone's got to. So yeah, I wrote Blazeball fiction as a holiday story. But I don't know if Blazeball would be, if I could say that it would be best game, because the majority of the work done to make it as richly lore-tastic as it is done by the fans. That's all fan-created. But, I don't know, maybe I should read all those asterisks about the, about what a game is. But I think I'm going to do something. Ancela is the lone YouTube watcher. I appreciate you, Ancela. I'm the lone Twitch watcher of a friend of mine's stream. And I show up there and tell him I am representing all of Twitch. Maybe Blazeball could be best fan work. I don't think so. But best fan cast or best fan scene, I mean, it's not, fan work is not a category. Yeah, I found that chat moves a lot slower. No, chat moves faster than the video does when I'm watching streams. When I'm watching Twitch streams. Sorry. Brain died. I have no idea how Hugo categories work. It's very, 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 very fussy with the descriptions of what makes escape pod a semi-prozine, or what makes a fan artist, and what makes a pro artist, what makes a related work. Because there's so much, especially with the internet, you know, these awards have been around a lot longer than the internet, but with the internet, it's been, there's so many ways to make different kinds of content. And as I've been to the Worldcon business meetings, they're run by Robert's Rules of Order, which I never knew was a thing until I went to those meetings. And everyone just assumes you know, if you buy the Worldcon membership, you have a right to go to the meetings and have your voice heard. But if you don't know what Robert's Rules of Order are, then you're going to be, you very likely just sit there and go, I have no idea what's going on. And it's stodgy and it's frustrating. And I guess it's like that because, you know, this kind of bureaucracy needs very rigid control, or else loopholes and all this stuff is going to fly everywhere. But the definition of what makes a short story and what makes a novel, and whether a story is considered, if it's released in audio in November and in print in March, which year is it eligible for the Hugo? It's all these things have come up. It's very fussy. Hey, Tish, good to see you. I need to give my get my shout out skill on. I think all the wiggly bits are why I haven't gotten into nominating or voting in the Hugos. Well, nominating and voting is pretty easy. It's the creation of the categories, or the altering of the categories, that get really you get all over the place. Very messy. Tish also has writing streams, both her vlog over at YouTube, and I'm pointing at it like YouTube's over there, I don't know, and her live writing sessions, which I joined one morning when I had horrible insomnia, and that was very helpful. So, thank you for listening. If you want to see me live, it's twitch.tv/mightymur. If you want to support via Patreon, it's patreon.com/mightymur. Probably see where this is going. My website is murverse.com, and my Twitter handle is mightymur. I write books, I do podcasts, I edit a magazine, co-edit a magazine, and you can find all of that at my blog. Yeah, shout out to our Patreon folks today, Margaret Dunlap and Topographic Topiary. I'm trying to remember, did y'all get shout outs if you support the Patreon? So thank you, Margaret, and thank you, Topographic Topiary. Couldn't do it without you. And I'll be back on Thursday, 12:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, with a live interview with Alistair Stewart, which I'm really looking forward to. Also, Hugo nominated for fan writer. So, thank you for listening. Keep up the good work, and you should be writing. Remember, you can support the show at patreon.com/mightymur. I Should Be Writing theme music provided by John Anilio. You can find more about him at johnanilio.com. This podcast is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike license. But I should be writing. I should be working on my.
spin your passion into a business with Shopify and break sales records with the world's best converting checkout. Let's hear that one more time. The world's best converting checkout. Shopify's legendary checkout makes it easier for customers to shop on your website, across social media, and everywhere in between. Now that's music to your ears. Any way you spin it, you can be a smash hit with Shopify. Start your $1 a month trial today at shopify.com/records.